Yes, can you hear me now?
I can hear you fine.
Good. Let's see if the folks, yes, the folks in the room can hear me as well. And did you just hear? And you know what I was supposed to ask you, is it Susie or Suze?
Sue's.
Okay.
But
Can you so
you
can
know, I'm
okay.
not real fussy. Okay.
So here I am with Suze Wicks, and let me by way, welcome, Suze.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you.
And by way of introduction, what I'm going to do is read you a bit of her biography in her own words, and then we'll take off from there. But let me remind you guys that when we do these live interviews, the reason we do them live is so that you guys can participate. So I want to be sure and invite you to do that. Anytime that you want to participate, please hold up your hand. So let's see, Suze's biography. She says, in 1987, my husband took his life. What followed immediately after were numerous experiences of the deepest love and clarity I had ever known. So profound were these experiences that a love I had never known before filled my daily canvas of life from moment to moment entirely. In an instant, I knew there was one God. In an instant, I knew there existed pure causeless joy, love, and deep peace, regardless of my circumstances. And most of all, in an instant, I knew it was all deeply within me. So complete was this knowing that I became hell-bent on figuring out how to expand this deliciousness of loving life so joyously, this shroud of widowhood with two young children. I held on to one truth. If something existed, it could expand and grow. Without a shadow of a doubt, I knew love, peace, and joy existed beyond anything my mind or experiences had ever demonstrated. Thus, what I was experiencing could grow and expand within me. It was also clear that I could not return to the old way of seeing and perceiving. Nothing of my past made sense. My life continued for some time between pure happiness and deep suffering. The many glimpses I had of my natural self led me on the spiritual path that ensued for many years, many teachers, many studies, only to discover that after much exhaustion, that what I was looking to expand and grow was always, always here right under my nose, and even closer, always accessible at any instant. The awakening and knowing that I was not in charge, and the fact that there is no separate self, led to the melting away of all concepts of identifying myself as a separate self. What remained was the return to all the instances I experienced after my husband's death, only this time it was permanent. What I am and who you are, have, and always will be life itself. That is the spiritual search we will all come to sooner or later. My page two is, oh, here it is. Suze also says, the tiniest drop of pure love felt in one's being is force powerful enough to abandon all else for the sake of discovering more. It is the discovery of who you truly are. Suze points the way to discovering who you are through questions, answers, and story. Again, welcome, Suze. And I should also point out that Suze is she also provided me a bit of a resume. She's a professional storyteller. She is a guide in Maine. She's been a hospice volunteer. She studied A Course in Miracles for over 20 years. Or she did study A Course in Miracles for over 20 years. We'll talk about that too. Is there anything else you would like to say about your background by way of introduction, Suze?
No, I think you did a terrific job, Jacqueline. That's very good. Thank
Good.
you.
Good. So I was fortunate enough to spend a little bit of time with Suze the other day, and get some information from her about her journey, and I want to share that with you guys. So, okay, great. So, Sus, we talked about the loss of your husband and how that impacted you and how that began your journey. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think one of the things about a death of a suicide, I was so overcome and so ecstatic, if you will, about loving someone greater than when they were actually present, that that was pretty much in the forefront. But behind that, I would remember it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot people have things around a particular type of death like suicide. And as much as I wanted to just leap forward with everything that was going on in terms of the joy and the peace and just this clarity of absolute love, it was the day-to-day of the culture that I live in, you know? And that would sort of like pull me back into, oh, right, people looked at me differently. There were people that my children couldn't play with their children anymore. And it was just sort of like watching it, if you will. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot. People have this thing that they live by, this creed that we live by that called judgment, this thing that doesn't even exist. But I certainly couldn't break through and do like going to Sagan and tell them like, hey, it's not true. But when you know it, there is this softening to the conditioned life that you know, the conditioned life that's around you and that you participate in. There's a real softening to that. And it was just sort of like, check, oh, that's right. Check, that's right. Every relationship, of course, has its own details and stuff like that. But my husband and I loving each other was not a difficult thing. As a matter of fact, we talk about it and that how nice it was that we just simply loved each other and that that wasn't pieces we had to work on, so to speak. And so there was it I had to actually be compassionate to people who actually hold some sort of identity to when someone takes their own life and what that might mean for them. It's like yeah, as much as I wanted to move forward with everything, at the same time, it was being a bit compassionate to what people didn't know, what I was knowing, what I was experiencing. And then there was, yeah, that was that, and that went on for some time. That went on for some time. So I would forget. I would forget. I would forget that couples do this couple thing, and when you're not a couple, that somehow should change a dynamic. And I'm like, what? Oh, I'm not fun anymore? What? So, I mean, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, yeah. Oh, unbelievable. I forgot. So there's a lot of adjustments, you know. That's so ironic. Adjustments. Adjustments to what? You know? Adjustments to what you're not, you know? So, but anyway.
Let me interrupt you a little bit and ask you, and you and I had talked about this, that my husband committed suicide in 1986, and when I read your biography, I went, wow, she did something completely different than what I did. What I did was I set about creating a new, improved, seemingly improved, better self, right? A different identity. And so I'm wondering if this experience for you was different in that. Obviously, you didn't set about creating a new, different, better self. But I'm wondering if we didn't experience the same lack of reference, the same type of facing that void in what we'd known before. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that led to if that led to some greater understanding?
Yes, very good, very good. I think, yeah, definitely there was no going back. That was very clear. And also, there was nothing in my past to reference a support for me to move forward. Nothing. Nothing. Well, other than like, oh, God, thank God there's a God, you know? It's like, okay, boom, that's real. Oh, my God, yeah, Holy Spirit. Yeah, it actually is. And the only reference that I had that I actually, this is very endearing, is to, in first grade in catechism, in Catholic school, first grade catechism, the very first chapter in the catechism is that God is everywhere. And God is in all things and God is everywhere. And I was like, booyah, yeah, totally, yes. And the other point of referencing, which plays into my character a little bit, is that that was very scary for me as a child to see that, because it was like, God knows I lie, 6 years old, like God knows that I, hate my sister sometime, or that I've stole a piece of candy. And it was a bit overwhelming to think that God is everywhere and in everything. So when I got to chapter 3, it was on angels, and it was like, okay, I could take on angels. Guardian angel, got it. It's going to keep me safe. I'm with that. I could do that. So interesting, to look back just at a very early age, to I just want to give you that as a structure, to already at 6 years old, defining and figuring out within the little one's life, God, I'm gonna, yes, you're too much for me, but a guardian angel I can take on. So I'm gonna move life in that pace. But as days went on, one, I had no reference really to what was going on as far as the what you might call supernatural experiences, clairvoyance, the clarity, the dream states of being able to see things with great clarity, but without any kind of feeling or sensation, just with ease and effortless. Of how things were occurring, but then there would be like, how sometimes a door will, they'll show you one side of the door and the door will flip, and then it's something completely different, and that's what it was like. And then it would be in deep mourning, pain and sorrow, but again, no references to even how to mourn, no reference even to how to put one foot in front of the other. What was just really important was there was no going back. There wasn't anything. I didn't feel unsupported. I didn't feel supported. I felt what was the point? What was the point of all of this? And the other was, I want to do everything I can so nobody ever has to suffer like this, to get to know that that love is there, to get to know that God is there. If you want to use God, that word, or the self is there. I wouldn't want to put anyone through that kind of pain or suffering. So there were two things going on, and of course, one is the taste for the truth, and the other is, I'm going to do it with who I think I know I am, which is what they call the game. I think it's a really shitful game, I'm not really fond of that game. But I think the fact it's something is really wonderful when a rug is pulled out from underneath you in a way that you have no reference. It's when you really are in the state of surrender, It really is. And it wasn't a state of surrender of saying, I give up. It was a surrendering where there's no other place to go. No other place to go.
And then you tell us that it looks like at that point you began a journey that involved many teachers, many studies. Do you want to tell us about that part of your journey?
Sure. I grew up with 13 sisters and brothers. I have seven sisters and six brothers, and there were five girls in a row. So the girls were a bit of a group, if you will. And my sisters were really wonderful in terms of just checking in with me, and I would share things with them of what was going on. And I didn't know it. They were thought I was going crazy, so they were always checking in on me, on my, is she crazy? Is she stable? Or whatever. So they were on their task. But one sister said, I think there's a book that might help you from what you're saying, and it's called A Course in Miracles. And a friend happened to be going into the city and said, I'll pick the book up for you. And the book was dropped off at my door. And it was a book of the most delicious smorgasbord of words I could have received, because everything within the book I could identify with what was going on with my experience, and it gave me great ease as a person, you know, as a separate self individual. It really, really eased me into a calmness, if you will, because it gave me stability within a place where I wasn't always feeling very stable. And I actually forgot what your question was.
I was asking you about the studies that you that you embarked on after after this initial traumatic event, if you will, after your husband passed.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Back up, because prior to that, you know the stories that people tell when they go into a bookstore and the book falls off the shelf and it hits them? You know, it's like, oh my God, you know, everybody wants that, you know? I was in an antique bookstore, and just like move, you know, when you're in deep mourning, you're just moving. You're just moving, you know.
Just going through the motions. Yeah.
Yeah, you really are. You really are. You just, you know, whatever. So I'm in a bookstore. I'm like, I look up and I see a book. It's just sticking out enough. I pull it out. It's Swedenborg, and it's all about angels, and very, very heavy, very, very wordy, but totally digestible. But I also was aware that I was a type of character that if I wasn't in the particular experience I was in, there's no way I would read this book. It was bone dry, and it was just not an easy read, but for me at that time it was. So Swedenborg was my first introduction into Beyond the Phenomenal World that I actually felt very clear about. And then shortly after came The Course in Miracles. And which was just, I would have to say, my grounding mechanism for me to actually function, to be a mother, to function, to be, to go to my job. It gave me the grounding mechanism that I needed. But I would come home and couldn't wait to, like, stop the world, get off, and go into the study with A Course in Miracles. And it was not easy. Oh, it wasn't easy, because I would forget it, you know. Go off for the entire, how can I forget something for 8 hours that I absolutely, it's like eating the best foods and forgetting you got to poop it out, you know. It's like, oh my God, you know. So that went on for some time, but, you know, it's just this crazy game of trying to figure it out. With what tools I had, and the irony is that all the tools I had were the ones that had to go, because it was all there. It was always all there, but some reason that's just how we go about spirituality. You know, yeah. It's sort of like, it's like who you are watches, gets to observe and really, you know, see this incredible dance of experiences, one after the other.
Yeah. Okay, I have a couple things. One is, given I'm recording this and we're going to post this on YouTube, I'm going to ask you to do something with your computer. And I just wonder if you could maybe push the screen back a little bit, because I'm cutting off the top of your head there. And
I see that. Yeah. Hold on. Oh.
Or just maybe tilt it. There you go.
Yeah,
much better.
Yeah. You see how I function? I'm pushing the books back. Now it was with a tilt.
That's perfect.
There you go.
Thank you. Now I'm going to ask you about your study of A Course in Miracles. I hear you to say at first you studied it alone in your spare time. But did there come a time when you started going to groups of study groups of A Course in Miracles students?
Yeah. Somewhere at some point I knew that you weren't, it recommends not to go with a group. And so I really honored that. And then, of course, curiosity, I went to a group, and the lovely people, but all they did was analyze it and talk about it and pull it apart. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's why you don't go with a group. Got it. And years later, many years later, I moved up to Maine, and there was a I didn't know it was A Course in Miracles group. I knew it was a spiritual group. And when I got there, they were doing the course. And I was like, oh, that's good. And what was really lovely was it really wasn't, it was facilitated only in the fact that who would open the prayer and close the prayer, the timer, if you will. And it was set up, they would read. And, but every, might be five, six, or sometimes four people, they were really, really going within and digesting it themselves. You know, they were not, sometimes, sometimes it's sort of like the wise person will speak because there's something that needs to be said, and the fool only speaks because it wants to say something, you know. And I think there's, you know, that goes, that just goes hand in hand, you know, it goes hand in hand. But with this particular group, it wasn't so much, wasn't so much at all. And they were very respectful and very loving when I was moving through particular things. And it was in that group that it was a spring day, and the birds were up in the bush singing. And you know, when you live in Maine, it's just it's greater than gold, you know. It really is. And so it was that moment with this group of people that I realized that the only one that was saying it was a beautiful spring day were my thoughts.
Wow.
Were my thoughts. The thought were my thoughts. And it just sort of everything I was saying and doing and being and working at were always thoughts running. I was aware of that, but not to that depth with that group. And then it was shortly thereafter that, you know, it's like 28 years with the course. And, you know, I was embarrassed to stand with the course for 28 years. You know, it's like, what? I go, really, if you could get the first page, you wouldn't have to read the rest of the 368, you know, pages. But, you know, anyways, I actually, you know, said, I'm done. Enough. I'm done.
And was that connected with that experience then that you were just describing where you got that was all your thoughts?
Shortly thereafter,
Yeah.
shortly thereafter. The connection doesn't really come into place till sometimes later, which often is the way things they go, you know. It's kind of like there's a sequence of things that happen, and then it's like, oh, you know, I hadn't quite seen the thread,
Right.
but and so yeah. And also there's this, you know, it's kind of like I said to you, it's like being on a carousel, you know, you can ride one horse that moves and goes up and down, and then maybe you can switch to a horse that doesn't move, or one that's painted more fancy than the other. And then they even have those like a nice carriage to sit in if somebody's not comfortable on riding a horse, you know. And who knows, and sometimes they may have something other than horses. But I was on such a roundabout for so long, for so long, for so long.
In terms of your spirituality,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, 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 yeah. Tried a lot of different things, you know, and they're all good. I mean, everything pointed to something. It's just that if they were good initially for the separate self personhood, you know. And also, you know, I felt like I was growing, because the more you take on in the realm of spirituality courses or practices or whatever, you start to think that you know, there's this craziness, you know. It's like when you're getting a PhD for what, you know. So yeah, you know, I was tired. I was tired. I was like, what is it that I can't get? I was tired. I was exhausted by words. I was exhausted by, I know it's there. It's there. It's always been there. But why am I not, why can't I just, why can't I expand it? So it's this wonderful, you know, it's a Rumi phrase about, you know, I've been knocking on the door, knocking on the door, knocking on the door, and the door opens up. but you've been on the inside the whole time. And it's like, yeah. It's like I always say, it was like, oh, the curtains have always been open for me, but I just thought it was the curtain. So you holding on to, yeah, it's crazy. The whole, the veil, the whole thing with the veil, the veil, the veil.
Yeah.
But you think you're the veil, The veil's lifted, but just you think you're the veil,
Right.
So
Wow.
where are you going? Going backwards. So I don't know.
Well, I don't.
it's like,
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No. There's this little Zen story of the little fish that's saying, goes up to the big fish and says, "Where's the water?"
Let me ask you, do you think that, gosh, how to ask this? Do you think that the course kind of keeps us trapped then on the carousel, or we just do that to ourselves by staying? I mean, I don't think your story is unusual. I think 28 years, 30 years, I think this, you hear this from many, many course students, that this has been their go-to teaching for many, many years. And so I know it's your experience that you needed to move beyond the course. Do you think that that's true in general?
I really can't say. I can only speak for myself. I think when you go back to the first page, real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. Get that. Really stay with that. Get that. What I really like about the course is that it covers so many of the egoic conditioned natures that it really, any one of those lessons can actually ignite and explode. Really you're undoing. And so, a lot of times we all take the course on with great reverence. We take that course on with great, oh my God, I got a course, that's going to be complete. So, there's all of that, but it has to be seeing how you're going at it. And, I think sometimes initially, a lot of times for people who've been in an organized religion or whatever, it has given them something to move out. But you yourself have to be willing to look to see where you're at. You have to be willing to look to see, not where you're stuck, but where you're at. Where you're at. I went to listen to a couple spiritual speakers on the way out. It was a lovely gal passing out books or book. When I walked by, she said, "Would you please take this book to your library?" And it was Born to Be Free by Jack O'Keefe. And I said, of course I'd take it to my library. Well, never made it to my library.
Made it to your personal library, maybe.
You got it. You got it. So, and that was that just crystallized a lot. And I like her work. I love her expressions. I really, she cuts to the chase. Boom. But she does a really wonderful world explaining the phenomenal world, explaining what where the dependency on happiness, explaining the dependency on spirituality,
Yes.
And she does a nice job between therapy and spirituality, So I think there's everyone is, every, everyone has the seed. Everyone has the seed. And, like you and I and others, we just got kicked through the threshold, that door. But not everybody, even getting kicked through the door, will move in that way. But, a seed grows and it ripens. And, we'll all ripen at the right time. What I like about ripening is that it can never, never, never be overripe.
Well, now wait a minute. Let me ask you about that because you talked about this issue of getting a PhD in spirituality. We've been looking as a group some at spiritual ego and developing this whole spiritual persona. So certainly if you certainly there comes a point where you have to recognize that that's what's going on. Is there it was it Jack's book that brought you to that recognition? Was it Grace? Is there something that, I should be checking for, or
You know, I think whenever we gravitate or pull or something gets dropped on our lap, they're like cairns. You know, the stones that are set up, the cairns to help you navigate your way. They really are just to help you navigate your way. And you know, sometimes the navigational process may take us to a left hook, and we could be out there for a long time. If you're if you fish at all, whether you're trolling or spin casting or you're fly fishing. There's times where you can be actually doing it all the time and never catch anything. But, until you realize that, there's that expression, what you're looking for is where you're looking from. Yeah, and I couldn't get that, really couldn't get that for a very long time. So I think because what you're discovering is who you already are and it's always there. It's really sort of it's unearthing what you're not. It's just that it just gets really sticky in some places, It really does, and it gets really the mind is, you can with your mind. You think your mind's not going to give up. It's like, holy crap, I made you,
Right.
So it's so funny, but and then there's the fear. Bottom line, fear runs its course, because for many minds, the thoughts feel safer to, I think is the word accrue to add things, to accrue things, than to let go. But I always said, you can't let go of anything if you don't know what you're letting go of. Don't give me this let go. Let go of what? You got to know what. What? Let go. And nobody's going to hold your hand when you do it either.
Or do it for me.
Hell no. Hell no. So all the dependencies and all the tools and whole toolbox of things that you have developed to just cope with life, to work through life, to just have peace with life. Gotta go. Gotta go. And for that's where the course, or sometimes we get stuck on the roundabout or the carousel. We're there because you don't want to let go. You got to want it. You just have to want it. You just, and I would be really tired, really tired. When I first started the course and when I first moved in this direction, I thought that awakening, I died. I was like, okay, I don't want to die.
I
Can I
like
get
me.
like up so close? Can I be like here?
Right.
Because there's always this, like, I realized before I was talking to you, what were some of the things that would come up in like the negotiation? Negotiator? Yeah. Oh, word, word, So, mind just does a lot of things. Just does a lot of things. I think one of the things about spirituality and what has come up before is how to integrate it. And that was a big thing for me, how to integrate the course in my daily life. And what I realized was the course is life itself. It's talking about life itself. And there really is no integration. It's living and loving life for life itself. I'm going to say that again because it's living and loving life for life itself. And your mind will never because there's no space for thought to play out there. The kind of conditioned mind, there's no, it doesn't have the capacity. It's not wired to do that. It's not. It's not. It's not. So it will come in to try to figure it out.
Well, and the condition was worried about taking care of me and my body and what I think I need and making sure things turned out the way that I think I need them to turn out. Those sorts of things, correct?
Well, Jacqueline, I think one of the hardest, this is just from my perspective,
Yes.
okay, is to realize you're not a body, that you're phenomenal just like everything else that comes and goes. The body comes in, it has a birth, it has a life, it grows, it will die, it goes, it comes and goes. So to give up, to give this up, this ownership, like St. Francis. Cool dude, St. Francis, man. That's how he ownership. He was able to give up all ownership, but all ownership is everything phenomenal. So when you are able to see that this vessel, beautiful vessel that each one has, that too is part of the phenomenal play. And that will come and go. And you just look at your own personality. It changes all the time. It morphs all the time.
Right.
And it comes and goes, you know? So that is, you think you got it all, and then you're like, what? Her? She? He? No way, man. I worked really hard. So, and you're right back to square one. Right back to square one.
Yeah, I think in my own journey, I intellectualized so much of this. Yeah, I know I'm not a body. Yeah, I know I'm not my thoughts. But I think that it stays on such an intellectual level until it doesn't. The only thing that seems to have turned the tide for me is, I don't know that it's any particular practice, but it seems that, and maybe it's willingness, but it seems that grace comes in occasionally and, opens that crack a little bit wider.
Yeah. Grace is like dark chocolate milk. It's like a Belgian chocolate. It's like all of it, And grace is always with everyone. Grace is always there. It's always there. It's like it's the blessing that you are. It's the blessing that each person is that grace. We have a tendency to recognize certain moments in our life, and we call it grace because there's no other word to call it but that. But yeah, it's a wonderful, sweet calling to know that grace is with you always, whether the mind is searching to find an experience for grace, or whether it's just, you can watch your mind, you can watch how you think, you can watch how you go about stuff, and you can watch yourself get angry, you can watch yourself get frustrated, you can watch yourself have an argument with someone and stuff. And that's really, that's where grace actually has its greatest potential, when you're not totally honed in to being that separate self, and you're not completely present with the activity of that separate self, but that you've actually given space. And that's where grace has that ability to soften things. I remember how I said to you, I felt such compassion for other people. I would have to remember how people might think of me, or how they might construct around a suicide and da 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 da, and what type of marriage they must have had, or whatever it resulted in, something like this. And but there was a lot of space for me, not to be bothered by any of it, but just actually to be very compassionate towards it. But
Is that what some would call the observer role or the witness?
I'm gonna just quick. I went back to school. I was in early education, and I'm gonna tie this in, and I will remember your question. And I was part of this program for adult learners, going back to school and stuff. And I was going back to get an early education degree, because that's what I was involved in at the time. And we had this wonderful, wonderful teacher. And, everyone's tired. They're working with children all day. You come to class at night. And the whole class for the next 3 months was to have a journal and just make observations. And I was like, oh, thank God. I can make an observation. I can be. And it was the first time I was actually, it was a study to write down the observations and not give an opinion, not to give a judgment, not to use any sort of emotion or sensation, just purely by observational standards. And it was such a joy, such a relief not to use the brain, the capacity of the brain in any other way but what you were seeing, hearing, blah, that was it. And that was a big. So when I talk about witness and observer, there's also that can be seen. If you're observing and witnessing, that actually can be seen as well. If
There's a
you're
step further
observing.
back than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is. Yeah.
So I've heard.
So, yeah. And it's there. It's right there with you and I right now. I'm observing, perceiving right now. But the real perceiver is what is shared, which is, the one and the same. So when you're resting there, when you move there, the impulse is to, the conditioning, the habit is really the habit is to move forward, is to do, is to how to figure things, is to do. But the more you kind of, if it helps to stay witnessing, observe, the more you start to do that, the more you're back with it, everything gets done. It gets done even better, and you're not so tired either. But, and so what if you forget? Big deal. So you forget, and you run with the mind for a while. It's like, oh, and then you just come back.
Right.
You just come back, You come back. Returning to the light that you are. It's not have to go build a pyramid. No. So why does it seem so hard and complicated? There's something about coming in and being recognizing phenomena and seeing yourself as something phenomenal, as a separate self. And there's something all about that. Clearly there is on this planet anyways. And then the sort of something happens, a jarring takes place. It's like, well, wait a minute, However it clicks in for people. And it doesn't click in for everyone. I find that in my experience that a lot of people just they want to feel good. They want to have enough money to pay for their bills and some extras to do things or take care of their children or take care of whatever it needs to be taken care of, maybe improve themselves in their job, get a better car, a nicer home, have a nice vacation. There's certain things that they want, and they're okay with the ups and downs. Not, it's like, well, you don't want like love every instant, every moment. You don't want, they're okay, people said to me, all my experiences are the sum of who I am, and I'm like, okay. Bullshit. Don't put that on YouTube. But it's like, who's to say that wouldn't be me saying that? That is me saying it. But there's a lot of suffering. It's a lot of suffering. A lot of suffering. And doesn't have to be so, but it is.
Right, and in fact, I would venture to say that many people are begin the spiritual path because to alleviate their suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, it hurts.
Yeah, it hurts.
Which is, what kind of game is that?
Who set this up anyway?
Yeah, what was I thinking when I signed the contract to come in and do this? There's a game called, I wrote it in my blog a long time ago, but Life was reminding me of the game Chutes and Ladders. It was a game that we play as kids all the time, and it's pretty much broad spectrum. Any age group can do it. And you roll that die to get all the way up to like number 96, I think it is, or get up there so that you almost get to 100. And then oh yeah, and then if you land on 96 or something, you have to slide all the way back down to number 3. I was like, that sums it up. That's, you climb the ladder, slide, climb the ladder, you get almost there and you slide down. It's like, well, who's sliding down?
Yeah, I tell you, I feel to ask you a question, a very broad question.
That's fine. Yeah.
That is, what is the truth? What's truth?
Well, I guess I would say to you, on whose behalf is asking that question?
I'm asking up for all these people listening. No, I'm teasing.
Yeah.
I mean,
The whole thing about the truth is that you are it, be it. It doesn't have a language. It doesn't have a particular action. As a matter of fact, it's nothing. It's not a thing. There isn't anything. It's nothing. But nothing doesn't mean that it's empty, it's void. On the contrary, nothing is because it's so voluminous, so unbound, words like love, peace, and joy, and bliss, they're just words. They don't even come close. They don't even come close to even the aroma, to just the sweetness of it all. They really don't. They don't, because the mind will take those words and try to entrap them to what that experience might be, and then you're
Right.
back in Chutes and Ladders. You're on the roundabout again.
Right.
So, it's, there's a, do you know the book Where the Wild Things Are? Yeah. Well, I must have went to see that movie about 5 times, because I just thought it was phenomenal about how the human characteristics played out in these big puppets and stuff like that. And it was amazing, it's like how we really are. And yet this little boy, when there's a moment where he says silence, he makes them stop. I'm not sure if he says silent, but something where he says stop, and there's this stillness. Be still is what he says.
Perfect. Yeah.
He says, be still. And he just, there's very few words in the book, if you actually read the book, but be still. And it's just this beautiful moment. And I just think those are amazing words.
Yeah, I think what many of us do, I hear Gangaji talk about where her teacher Papaji told her just stop, and she's like, okay, how do I stop? Exactly how is that done? Because that's what we're used to achieving, and yeah, and doing, and so we don't even know how to stop.
No, we don't, because we value what we do. We really do value on doing. We doing. We to feel good about ourselves is based all on doing. It really is, and that habit has to go. And it's like, well, it takes great courage to say, okay, I'm very mainstream. I wanted to go join the nunnery. I wanted to go to an ashram. I wanted to do a lot of different things, but it was not it, every any time I tried to move in that direction, it was complete, just wasn't happening.
Right.
So I didn't talk to many people about much at all, and I like to talk, so that was a big thing for me to shut up. And I wanted it, I didn't know that there was such a thing as a to have your own guru, so but that wasn't the Course in Miracles was the teacher. I just, my path was not going to have any, just wasn't in that. And that is what it is. And I think it's important to tell people, go within and do what it is that really resonates for you. You don't have to talk about it. Just be with it. You don't have to know anything about it because you already are. Yeah, the whole, you don't stop what you're doing. Most people don't. It's very rare, It's very rare. But there's a way that your life takes on a completely different, when you love life or life itself, you're living it. You're organically life. It doesn't mean that if somebody pulls in front of me, I can get annoyed. Another time I just pull back. But you don't hold on to the habits. You see them as habits. And they can rear their ugly heads whenever. Oh, I thought I worked on that. Well, who's saying I thought I worked on that? You just keep calling a spade. You just keep calling it out. Just call it out.
You mean when you see something in you, then you look at it again?
Yeah. Who's talking? Who are you representing? But when you start to see it, you do laugh,
So, let me ask you, do you see it as, and I realize my questions are all going to sound like, oh, gee whiz, how can I get me some of that? But what I really, I mean, it's the nature of the language, I
Sure,
think.
yeah.
What I really want to ask is, do you see it as just a matter of being consistent in remembering you're not the persona, you're not the body, you're not this role, you're not that role, and just consistently reminding yourself of that?
Maybe initially, perhaps initially, just to sort of get out of the habit of what your thoughts are. But that's about it. Because otherwise, you're just changing one thought for another. You're not really, you're playing the game, but you're playing it differently. That's all. My head just said, you've gone from Yahtzee to cribbage, I shared with you a little bit earlier about being silent and what silence meant to me, about what that means to be silent. Because really, what you're going to do is not pay attention to the thoughts anymore. You're not really going to go in like a peanut butter jelly sandwich with them. You're not going to go to bed with them. You're not going to dance with them. The worst dance you could do with your thought is the tango. You know how tight that is? You're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. So, but what happens is that the conditioning, the habit is so dependent on thought. It's like it's a security blanket, So when you go into stillness or go into quietness, you have to know what that is for you. And for me, when I was seeking out quietness, stillness, so seeking it out, and my husband, God bless him, said, I got this great place. Up in, great little Maine, population 3, little cabin on a lake, it's going to be great. We don't have to do a tent this time, which we love to tent, and kids can go swimming, whatever, go fishing. And we get up there and it was beautiful, just beautiful, quiet cabin and nothing around, population 3, well, with our family, it made it 5, but everything was great, and that night, all of a sudden, I said to John, "What is that noise?" And he said, "Well, that's the generators. The generator's got to run, we got a little refrigerator here." And it was this noise in the middle of this beautiful, pristine area, and I couldn't believe it. So it was really difficult for me to digest that. And then the following year, We joined us. Oh, I found this place to go fishing up in Maine. It's even further, goes inland. Nobody's there. It's going to be great. It's going to be quiet, just like you want it. I got a cabin and they cook food. It's like, great. Okay. So we go and the kids are there and stuff. Everything's quiet, beautiful place to fish. And then at night, all of a sudden, I hear this roaring noise. And I said to my husband, "What is it?" And he said, "That's the waterfalls." I go, "Waterfalls? We're near a waterfall?" But it was hydraulic, so they would run it at night. And it was like, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. You work all year long for your like 2 week vacation of silence, whatever. And the third time, it's the third time. I'm working for a cottage and I have a cabin on the lake. It's quiet, big long lake. I get up very early in the morning to sit quietly. I hear these huge dump trucks coming, shifting gears as if they were like literally going right in front of me. But the way the sound would bounce on the lake, it was, and the trucks left at, 5:36 a.m. And the only way to get around was around the lake. So, and it would, I was the type of character, it would take that much for me to realize that I was looking for the outs. I was looking to the outside to give me something inside. I wouldn't have told you that. I wouldn't have told you that because I didn't recognize that I was actually doing that. And it was sort of like, okay, Susie, do you get it? It's within. So, and if you're, it's kind of like if you're in a restaurant, very busy restaurant, and all those tables are really tight together. And at first it might be difficult, but then in a matter of time you're completely engaged in your conversation and nothing else. Nothing else, yeah. So it's some of it is actually learning who you are, through these different things and recognizing how dependent and how habitual it is to look to the outside to give it to me. To provide it for me, or I'm looking out there to make it happen. Clearly, I wasn't successful. But they were really, really, very loud experiences for me to have, to know what silence really is.
I want to invite the folks in the room to ask questions. Well, it looks like we've got half an hour left,
Okay.
and so now would be a good time, I think, for folks to ask questions if they have them. If you do, I've got to move a few things around on the desk to make that happen. Let's see. Okay, and Ruby has her hand up. Ruby, if you'll wait just a minute after I let go of the mic to let me get set up to ask your question. If I have any technical issues, I'll let you know that. So, one second.
Hello, Susie or Suze. Thank you. I'm really enjoying your talk. I had a question about how do you see suffering now, as to before you had awakening? How did you see suffering before, and how do you see suffering now? Thank you. I'm letting go of the mic.
All set?
All set.
All set? Yeah, thank you. Very good question. Very good question. Prior to awakening, I could tell you just witnessing my husband suffer from being a manic depressant. Depressive, present person. That's how he was diagnosed. But and having psychotic episodes and having severe depression and seeing someone suffer from a depression that I realized that depression itself has such a physical pain for people. You know, I myself don't have any of that. And you know, I was aware of things, but pretty much I would say that because it was so close to see that kind of suffering, it was all I could do at that point was to do what I knew how to do physically, and just love the situation, just love. And earlier, if you heard me, I grew up with 13 sisters and brothers, and my mother was very, very busy, obviously. And my dad worked two jobs. So we were very codependent on one another for any kind of love and support. And that actually turned out to be a great service to all of us as we became adults, because we saw the world a little differently because of that. And then once I was awakened, actually we had many deaths in my family that were sad, young people that you would call sad. And I remember how heavy the energy was, how heavy and laden the vibration of sadness it is for people, the suffering of sadness. And I actually couldn't even stay in the rooms with the other people because I could, it was just, you're so aware of it, you know, it's just so thick. And I remember going out and also knowing that they weren't looking at light. They weren't capable yet to look at light, to be with their own light. And you're just there with it. There's no judgment. There's nothing that goes on. You're just there with it. There's nothing to be done but to be there in your own light. I just had to move myself physically, and it's there. You know, the Native American have this great expression that when things are going awry and sadness and suffering is happening, it's on a crooked path, going a crooked way. And you just see that, you know, you just see that. It's all of who you are. It's just that that's just one tiny, 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 tiny spectrum that can be played out. But there's no less love, no less love.
Thank you. Does anyone else have, and I'm hoping you say yes, does anyone else have a question that they would like to ask Suze? Ruby says thank you, Suze.
Yeah,
you're welcome. There it is. There's the silence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, so tell us what you're doing now. Just tell us what you're doing now.
Sure. This Saturday, it's here at my home in Maine, in Nobleboro, Maine, from 9 to 5. It's your day, one day, all day. And we'll be sitting and just observing and watching and just really delving deep in to being in stillness and quietness. And watching thoughts, watching patterns, just really working on that. And that's going to be all day with a lunch. I love to cook, so I always cook for people who come and stuff. And I used to host on Sundays here at my home, but last June, mid-June, I took a job up in Acadia. So it was 2.5 hours north of where I am to be with my husband. And so so I'm in a different position right now from where I am. I work, I'm a gardener and I'm a grower, so I'm in a greenhouse by myself right now, but it's almost like my own silent retreat. I'm very,
very
so
nice.
It's really pretty special right now. So my group offerings are much less at this point. And that's where I am with that right now.
So, got a little bit of feedback there. So if folks wanted to find you, either to speak with you personally, I don't know if you do that, or to find what you've written, how would they do that?
Well, I'm open to any questions or any conversations and sharing people want. I can be reached at 207-441-1447. They can also go on to my blog, Seussisms. Okay, they can just look up Seuss Wicks and Seussisms. I have a lot of things I post there, and you can contact me through that as well, through the email.
And the groups that you're meeting with there in your home and cooking for, how is it that those folks found you or find you? Is it a regular group that you meet with, or how does that work?
Yeah, it started out to be a regular group, and they were people, some people were from the Course in Miracles, and other people were just, it's self-inquiry is the name of the group and stuff. And a lot of it is for me when there's a core group that was coming regularly. And of course, now that I moved away, we don't have that group, but they're going to be coming this Sunday, so we'll get back together a little bit. Also, I felt it was really important to actually take a break, and not a break so much, but just sort of like, right now I don't need to say anything else. I really didn't need to say anything else. Go and do it. Just not do it, but just be it, you know, and you know, call yourself out. Call yourself out on it, you know, and find something that actually clicks on whose behalf is on whose behalf is speaking here. Mm-hmm. You know, really begin to identify every time you're identified with a separate self. And you know, one of the things about staying with the belief in your phenomenal self being me is that there's you find extreme value in that. You're really dependent on the value of that separate self.
And you're challenging your group to see how they value that separate self?
And you're still holding on to it. Yeah. But you know, it's okay. It's right. Okay. But don't say, I don't want to suffer anymore. You know, my mom, I told you, she'd say, poop or get off the pot. You know, she didn't say poop. Okay.
Right.
But yeah. So, yeah, I feel like, be done.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You're just pussyfooting around, you know? Don't, stop it. Stop it. Stop playing child's game. Stop it, you know? It's just a continual game of hurt, so stop. Do you really want to stop? Then really, really, you know, do. So.
Just do it. Just find out where you're doing it, and
yeah,
quit,
you
and
gotta
stop.
Catch yourself. You have to call. You do have to call it out. You gotta call it out, because when you start calling it out, it loosens itself. It really does. You know, if you wanna get in the game and play the game, you find out where all the weak spots are, right?
Right.
You really do. You hone it in. You tighten it up. And the way that you do that, you find out where all the weak spots are, all the loose spots where things aren't being paid attention to. So, and it's great because it's all right there. It's all the thoughts coming and going, you know? You know? So, and, you know, I love metaphor. I mean, see that you're a cloud. See that your body's a cloud. See that everything that comes and goes is a cloud, but you're the sky. So you need to know that you're always the sky, even if it's full of clouds. It's like the sun is always shining. It's just relative that it rises and sets. It's always shining. And, you know, something that just came to me is, you know when we go through the begging stage? Come on, all you beggars. I know you're out there like, please, I can't stand it anymore.
Please no. Save me.
Yeah. Yeah. I call it the begging stage, you know? Oh, God. Yeah, well, I know how to beg, so I know what that's all about. But it's like You have to look at who's begging. Mm. You have to look at who's suffering. You have to look at the one that's suffering, because there is no suffering. So you have to see that the one that is suffering is one that's been made up, been made up, been made up, and made up, and made up. And you can't. And you know why it's made up. You're born, you're given a birth certificate, you're given a name, you know, you're very on. It's all habitual, you know, your toes, the songs we sing, everything that you do, you feed, your habits, everything. So you know how it gets all made up. So, but I would say it's only a few seconds and you can get it, you know. Few seconds.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that many of us get intellectually, but maybe it's like when the Course says, Jesus in the Course says, you know, you're much too tolerant of mind wandering. It sounds like you might be pointing in that same direction.
Yeah. He also said to lose yourself to find yourself, you know. And what does it mean to lose yourself to find yourself? And the same way, nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, but, you know, to actually unearth what that is, to really unearth that, to, you know, I guess bake a good brownie, you know, you got to have all those ingredients and it all has to be done, you know, it really does. You can't leave out the baking soda, you know, kind of thing, or it'll taste awful. But, it's just, you know, stay on board, be the navigator, be your navigator. Don't let anyone else navigate your spirituality, because then you're just, you know, you're like, you know, you're just a follower, you know, you're not a follower.
Yeah.
Nobody is. And, you know, if people really wanted to do something, you know, to make changes. Here comes my dog.
Hello, dog.
If people really wanted to make changes and do something for the world, they would wake up.
Mm.
That would be your priority. That would be the number one. Really would. Just by your mere being, you can change others without even knowing it. Because you wouldn't need to know. Huh? You see how we value ourselves? You get into value by doing. It doesn't mean that what you're already doing ends or stops,
right.
But where you see it from changes. Where you see it from will change. Because you won't see it by the identity of a separate self doing anything.
Yeah. It's all good stuff. I think that... and it's all good stuff that's beginning to dawn on me. But I think for many, many of us, for many, many years, we're still going, huh?
Yeah, it's okay. You know, it's okay. It really is. You know, the other thing that I think is important, and I do think this is important, is it's good to go to a space that's set up for awakening purposes.
Okay, and what does that space look like, and how often do I go?
Well, you probably already are providing it in some capacity, you know, but there isn't anything else that's going on but that alone. You know, either it's a weekend thing or a thing, but wherever it is that space alone is the space to be there in support, if you will, you know, for your awakening. Nothing else.
Mm.
Absolutely nothing else. So, and that actually can help. It can help.
So if I were to take 2, 3, 4, 6 days a month and just turn off the phone, turn off the TV, turn off the computer, and just be in my own space. Is that something? Along
Get
the
out of
lines.
town, Jacqueline. Get out of town. Get out of town.
Go away somewhere.
I'm not going to feed that baloney to you. You can do it. You can do it right now. But it, No.
Oh, we'll do clarify.
Yeah, I will. Okay. You go into the bathroom, sit down, relax. No. But when you're home and you're around things and so on and so forth, yeah, those are all good things habitually. Those are good things habitually. Do they help you wake up? No. Those are good things to help settle everything. But if you were to, your intention, let's just say from 9 to 4 or something with some other people or even for yourself, is just to sit there and be there with no distractions other than, you know, whatever you need to do for the body, and to watch your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Not engage with them, but watch them, and then catch yourself. So what happens, you don't catch yourself when you're engaged with them, because when you're engaged with the thought, you become the thought, okay?
Right.
You become the emotion, the feeling. But because they come and go, you can go, oh, I just spent 15 minutes, you know, doing the tango.
Right.
You know? So that's the practice that I'm talking about. So if you're in an uninterrupted space, or a space that's all we're going to do, and, you know, resistance can come up very easily, you know, kind of thing. And resistance is, you know, the only reason why the word resistant comes up, because it's something that we don't want to do, or something that we feel agita about, or something that doesn't feel right, so we call it resistance. But really, it comes and goes, just like anything else.
Right.
So what? Resistant comes up, comes and goes. This is the piece, you know. Someone starts crying or whatever. Okay, that too comes and goes. Someone starts laughing, you know, comes and goes. Not negating anything, but just allowing yourself time to see that things come and go. Mm. Because too much of the day gets absorbed in stuff that's, you know, it's the old habits kick in real easily. Don't set something aside in the future. Do it now. Do it now. You know, this isn't mine. Mine wants to do. Hey,
yeah.
Can I have an outline here? And you know, yeah. Well, that's the PhD you're working on. You know, it's never finished. You know, it's a cathedral. Cathedrals are never done.
Yeah.
But we're not building cathedrals. You know, you just go into the heart.
So when you say find a space, you're not talking about a physical space. You're talking about that space here.
You can find a physical space. You can go somewhere where there's a retreat, or and I'm not saying a retreat where you get massages and stuff. And those are all good. This is really like I'm serious. I want to wake up. I want to know who I am. Massage will feel good to my body and da da da. But does it wake you up? We'd all be getting massages if it woke up. You know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is within. It is initially the exercise is within, and stay within. And then at some point, I wish I could do a good pop song.
That was good.
It does.
Yeah.
When I talked about what was going on for me, and if it was there, that exists, it can grow, it can expand.
Yes.
You know, and for me, I just sort of like went through the other door and tried to go at it at that particular way, which got me. What it did was got me to see all the different navigational paths were dead ends. But, you know, for me anyways, you know, I had to see them as dead ends. You have to see them as, you know, or else you'll continue to pursue it.
Yeah.
You'll pursue it, and then you're on the carousel kind of thing. So, but, and that, you know, may require giving up. But changing the regime a little bit, you know. Mine's not going to like it, I can tell you that. No, it won't. I'm just going to be happy about it. So what? That comes and goes, too. It does. It comes and goes, too. Just remember, nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. So everything that comes and goes is unreal.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. It's so funny. What, 28 years later, it's like, hey, if I can get the first page of the book.
Well, and I got to tell you that, wait a minute, I got to write this down. I got to tell you that, frankly, and me too, I've been looking at A Course in Miracles for that long, and I realized that I have been looking at that beginning quotation in a very strange way from the personal self's point of view, because I'm thinking, I don't even know if I can explain it, that, you know, when it says nothing unreal exists, I am not including the personal self in that, you know, the unreal part, right?
Yeah.
I'm including everything that can threaten my unreal self.
Yeah.
But,
that's right.
But yeah. I was not including the unreal self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why, you know, and that's where, yeah. And that's, yeah, same thing. Same thing. Same way. That's why I was always looking externally, depending on the external world, to bring it up. And yet I knew it was always within me. But, and I had the joy of that awakening. And you know, once that's open to you, never. It's a done deal. That's what's really wonderful. It's like the essential key ingredient to life itself. You know. Because you got a glimpse of who you are. It's that immense. So, and you also too, you know, having had an experience where I loved someone at such an incredible capacity, more when they were gone than when they were alive. It's like, whoa, very cool. You know, what is it? You know, yeah, kind of thing. But yeah, I did the same thing. I was willing to give up everything and see that it wasn't real, but myself. Right. I hadn't gotten to that step.
Right.
You know? So, and that's a... But that's good. You're there.
Yeah, thank you.
You're there. Those are the things. I wonder, there's so many wonderful spiritual teachers and people speaking out and... including you, including everyone listening and everything that's going on. It's sort of like we're just reminding each other. We're just nudging each other. We really are. Some are going to kick in the ass, you know. Some you need to. I felt I was. I felt I was, and I felt, boy, if I can help others not to have to go this way, that would be great. But that's not up to me, you know.
Yeah. Well, I certainly appreciate you being here with us this evening and, you know, and sharing what you've shared. I really am quite blown away by not having seen that in the Course in Miracles. I'm like, oh wow. But I appreciate the service that you do and your willingness to share that with us.
Good. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was great. And namaste to everyone. So. Wish you well, and may your grace open your doors and know that you're not the door. Don't be the doorknob. Don't. Okay.
Thank you so much. Namaste.
You're welcome. Blessings.